Welcome to Sprinkle with Hope podcast with your host, Jason. We have another international guest with us, all the way from the United Kingdom, Lisa Edwards. And her story is just incredible to begin with, where she came from. And I think it goes back to the testament that Shane and I have talked about, adversity. It sometimes you just need it to get through and see beautiful things on the other side.
She does share some really heavy things, but she also shares some amazing things that she's learned and journey that she's on right now. So hopefully you get some inspiration from this. And we really enjoyed the discussion with Lisa. So here she is.
Welcome to the Sprinkled with Hope podcast.
Welcome to Sprinkle with Hope podcast with your host, Jason. We have an awesome guest all the way from the UK, Lisa Edwards. We are so excited she joined our show today. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. That's the whole of the UK I represent. I'm bringing with me.
That's right.
No, we're so excited and happy to have you come on. This seems like it's been in the works for a while now. And so we're happy to bring you on. Would you mind just kind of giving a little bit of background, kind of who you are, you know, a little bit about your history? Just who is Lisa Edwards?
Who is Lisa Edwards? Oh, that's a good question, isn't it? Well, I'm an inspirational speaker, which is quite a recent journey, really, in the last couple of years, a year and a half. I started embarking on that, telling my story, really. So I would say, rather than a speaker, inspirational storyteller, I prefer to call myself, because basically I tell stories. Also, I'm a best-selling author, which is official. Yay! I can say, from November last year, we hit number one. It's a co-authored book. The book's called Unstoppable Women, and it's a co-authored book with other great women just sharing their stories and message, really. So that went to number one in the Women in Business category in Amazon last November when it was just after it was launched. So that's cool. And I'm basically a master practitioner of hypnotherapy, NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming, timeline therapy. And I'm also a student, I haven't certified yet, but I'm a student of Havening techniques, which is like a psychosensory therapy. So it's less of the talking and more of the inducing delta waves by touch and things like that. So that's me. I'm a mother as well. I have a grown-up son. Well, he's not so grown up. He still needs a bit of looking after. He's a teenager. So partner, sister. Yeah, that's me. Quirky, great. Silly. Tell lame jokes.
That's awesome. You'll fit right in with us then.
Yeah. Well, I'm terrible because I tell the punchline first. I'm terrible at lame jokes.
So we've talked to a few inspirational speakers, and I always like to ask them, why did you get into inspirational speaking, coaching, those type of things? Often what we see is that people go through a struggle or a big trial in their life, and then they want to reach out to other people and help them. So I'm curious how you got into this coaching and speaking.
Yeah, that's quite a long story, actually. That is really my own, I suppose, a hero's journey of my own difficulties. It was a relationship. It was kind of a journey of self-discovery, really, where I was kind of at a rock bottom point. I don't know if you want me to sort of tell that story.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, it's briefly or the long version or the short version.
Whatever you feel like sharing.
In a nutshell, I mean, you can expand it if you want to ask me questions. In a nutshell, it was a six-year relationship. Well, I met a guy online dating, you know, as you do. It was kind of when it all first started, really. So before the whole apps and the swiping, I've been in a long relationship with my son's father. It came out and it was, so I met this guy online. He just seemed like a regular, normal, nice, decent guy. We were together for about 6 years, and he was, I sparks weren't flying, but it was kind of, you know, it was good. It was decent. I couldn't really complain, I suppose. The things that didn't really work were there was not much involvement with his family or anything. And he was always coming and going with work. You know, we went on vacations, as you say, and things like that. So it was normal. Everybody liked him. My family liked him. And we got about 6 years, things kind of started to go a bit wrong. It was an understatement, actually. I sort of moved house and I felt like things were quite stagnant. Nothing was really progressing after 6 years. I suppose I was expecting marriage, feeling that we should progress, and things weren't progressing. And I was kind of, you know, for me personally, I'd sort of kind of switched off a little bit to the relationship. And he came home late one day, and I was sort of having a go at him for being late because we were supposed to be going out shopping. And he put his head in his hands and he said that he'd just been to the hospital, he'd come back and he'd been diagnosed with a brain tumour. And of course, that just stopped me in my tracks. 34 years of age, a young man, you know, despite everything, I remember it was this hot summer's day. Yeah. And I just felt ice cold that, you know, like, oh my God, here's me thinking that I want to plan a wedding, and now, oh my God, I might be planning a funeral, you know. So that was pretty traumatic. And then the events that kind of followed were just, well, quite mind-blowing. Around the same time, I was having sort of discussions on Facebook with his work colleagues. They were saying things, you know, he didn't have to come in today, and things like that, about, like, I was saying how he was not very well, he was having headaches and things, and having discussion. And then for some reason, this woman that he was working with, colleague of his, which was this beautiful, you know, I saw a Facebook picture, she was stunning and beautiful, and she started trolling me and abusing me and sending me all these kind of, like, just out of the blue, just because I sort of spoke to her about, you know, him and how he was doing,
right?
Because she kept asking me how he was doing, and I kept saying, look, you know, you just need to just give him some time, you know, he's not very well. And it transpired that she began trolling me and sending me explicit messages, saying things like, you know, I'm better in bed, you know, sexually explicit, like very sordid details about what she wanted to do with him, and how I was too old, too ugly, and all the rest of it to satisfy him, and he shouldn't be with me, he could do better. So we had all this going on as well. This was quite stressful. I had communication with his boss via email to say, you know, this needs to be addressed. And he then disappeared for a couple of days. I couldn't get, you know, and then he came back again. He couldn't explain where he'd been. I couldn't get hold of him. He turned his phone off. And I was thinking this is because he's ill, you know, his tumor. And you don't know what's going on. This is a man who's never behaved in a bad way. He was always very kind to me. He was always very complimentary. He never said a bad word to me. He never started arguments. He was always the person to stop the arguments, and quite a very calm, humble person, if you like. I would describe him as a very humble person, meek person. And so his behavior became quite erratic, very, very uncharacteristic. And I, again, attributed this must be because he was ill, afraid of dying or something. And so I explained it this way. He came back and he couldn't explain where he'd been. Nothing was making any sense. I went upstairs to have a bath. He barged into the room and he put his hands down between my legs very aggressively. And then after I came out of the bath and he was waiting in the bedroom, he then sexually assaulted me again there. And I put it down to his illness. You know, I thought this is an ill man. Plus, there's always that thing that, you know, you're in a relationship. So is it really sexual abuse? Is it assault or not? Because, you know, this is somebody you haven't
abused.
You know, you kind of question those things, I suppose. Yeah. You kind of think sexual assault is something that happens on a dark night with a stranger. You're dragged into a bush, you're held at gunpoint, knife point, whatever. So you kind of question that in your own mind. Is that really, you know, did that really happen? Is that wrong? Is that, you know? And also, again, I was explaining it because this man's sick, you know, he might be sick. But I did, obviously, I was completely shocked, horrified. I did send him packing and said, I need to leave. And then about two days later, maybe, he came back banging on the door, and he was pleading with me, saying he didn't have anybody else. He was afraid of dying. It was growing in his brain and all this kind of thing. Just pleading with, you know, guilt tripping me, I guess. And how could I turn him away? I couldn't. I felt like I couldn't turn this man away. And so I accepted him in. I said, look, I will help you. I will support you. I think that, you know, you've overstepped the mark. I don't want to be with you. I will support you. You can come here. You can sleep on the sofa, and I want to come and come with you to all the hospital appointments, because that's something that I hadn't been able to make. It was always at a time when I had to take my son to see his father, or I had to go to work, or, you know, and I couldn't get that time, right? So again, things started happening that I just couldn't get to these hospital appointments. And I was like, there was just this feeling in my inside that something was wrong.
Yeah.
And I started going through these things. Now, I am not the kind of person to ever start rummaging through somebody's belongings, personal. I respect people's personal space, but I felt inclined to do so. This is how badly I was, like, this is something wrong. And I started looking through his bag and I found a mobile phone that I had never seen before. It was another phone. And I turned it on and, oh God, I remember I was standing in the bedroom and already as soon as I saw this phone, my heart was just, I could just hear it pounding.
And yeah. Just
pound. Like, you know, that something very, you know, you're not going to like what you're going to see. And I turned it on and the first message that I saw was this picture message. It was of a baby, photograph of a baby. And it said, you know, do you want to come and meet your child or... do you want to do a DNA test? And I just sat down on the bed, like I just felt like the room was spinning. I felt sick. And that was like kind of the first thing that I found out. But over the next kind of 2 weeks, I found out that he was also married. So he had another relationship. He lied about his place of work. So the place of work that he said, and all the Facebook colleagues that he'd create, that I'd spoken to and corroborated the story of the brain tumor and everything, and where he was going when he was going out with his friend and everything else, none of them existed.
Oh my goodness.
So he'd actually gone to extreme lengths to lie, you know, so that the woman who was trolling me, she didn't exist. It was him. So he'd been sending me all these, it was like he had some kind of split personality or like, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to sort of start saying labels because I'm not a therapist. So I don't really know, but it's almost like schizophrenia or some kind of like he actually became this other person and created this whole world. And it went back quite a long years because I found out that he'd been creating fake Facebook profiles for years. And in fact, our whole 6-year relationship was a complete lie, you know, almost apart from his name. There were some things that I knew that were real, but it was almost like, I don't know if you have, do you have the game Jenga in know, when you're pulling, it's almost like, as the days went by, I would find like another lie. It was like pulling everything away from my world, that my 6 years that I'd known, until literally there was like, you know, and everything just collapses and you're just thinking, oh my God, like, is anything real? Was anything real?
Yeah.
Was anything real? Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, it's also for me because I wasn't like a young, I didn't think I was young and naive and, you know, I think, okay, I have a degree education.
Right. And,
you know, how could I not see this? So I had this hideous, like, just this feeling of like, what an idiot, what a fool, how stupid was I, and this humiliation that the whole world was laughing at me and I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my backstory. And obviously it took me quite a long time it's a story that I never told until very recently because it was so humiliating. It's like going outside, feeling kind of stares and snickers behind you, you know,
right.
It's that kind of paranoia that the whole world is laughing at you. They're not, they're just getting on with their own lives. But it felt to me like everybody knows. And, you know, how could I have been such a fool? How could I have allowed this to happen? And obviously I blamed myself. And so for many years, it's something that I buried, really. I mean, initially I wanted to scream about it and I wanted the whole world to know because I was so angry.
Yeah.
I didn't want anybody else to have. So I did go to the papers initially, like I've contacted like journalists and things. And because it was such a crazy story, everybody was like, oh yeah, you know, I want to come. I actually had a journalist come round and he sat in my living room and he had this dictaphone and I was going, oh, and then this happened and then this happened and then this happened and this. And I was completely, I was just nuts. I felt like I was enraged, incandescent, you know, and like nothing made sense. I was like, you know, and this person, how could he do that? I mean, I even went to the police and go, it was like hysterical. I mean, I'm laughing about it. I'm not trying to detract this on the serious.
Sure. Things,
but I just feel like I was almost, it was hysteria that took over me in a way. And I remember the journalist that came around and he wrote this piece for like, you know, like a woman's magazine, you know, the kind of story that you see, like, oh, I don't know, Jane had triplets, you know, went to the toilet, she had a bit of wind and then she gave birth to triplets and you think, oh my God, how can that happen? You know, you don't believe that kind of story. And I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna be one of those people. You know, that everybody's like, really, that just doesn't happen in real life, you know, how can you not know? And I thought to myself, like, no, just the humiliation and embarrassment of it. And when I read it, I was like, oh, no, I can't tell this story. And also it was twisted. So it kind of portrayed me as this pathetic victim. There was no happy end. It wasn't an inspiring story because it wasn't motivational. There was no message to other women. There was no hope really within the story. It was just a story to sell a magazine. So I just thought, no, this is not really what I want to be part of. And so I just buried it. And then a lot sort of happened in between. And do you want to carry on telling that story? So that happened between. So after that, I was in pieces with it. I really know I couldn't trust my right hand from the left hand. It became so, I think I was just paranoid constantly about like who was telling the truth. And you know, if anybody Facebook friended me, like somebody sent me a request on Facebook or any social media or something, I was paranoid at who that person was, were they really this kind of whole. So I just listened to music and I exercised a lot. I think that really helped. I listened to I felt a bit like a puppet, you know, like music was kind of like lifting my arms and sort of the rhythm was sort of getting me out of bed and moving me in a way to get through the day. And it literally what felt like that sometimes, that the only way I could get out of bed was to listen to some kind of motivational uplifting music. It got me through the day. Because I had to get up for my son. I couldn't just lie in bed. I wanted to lie in bed.
Right.
I couldn't, you know. Yeah. You have to get up. And so that sort of got me through. And then I started sort of like meetup groups then. You have meetup groups, I think, in the US as well, do you? Where you get like social groups and things.
Right.
And I started going like walking, hiking, meeting people. And then I ended up in another relationship, which was way, way too quick, way too quick. I really hadn't dealt with any of my issues at all. But I kept him at a distance. It was kind of like, you only come when my son's with his father, you're not meeting my family. You know, it was like, okay, this is just going to be a bit of fun or, I don't know, company, whatever you want to call it. And of course, we started having feelings and then things gets complicated. You know, it started getting complicated and difficult. And I went into that relationship with a victim mentality. I was a victim. And unfortunately, I felt in a way that the whole of mankind owed me somehow, or he had to pay. And I behaved, I didn't do anything, you know, I didn't go with anybody or anything like that, but just the way that I was constantly, you know, he was brilliant, actually. He understood. I mean, he did know about the previous relationship. He did as much as he could. He was a great guy. If we weren't together, he would be sending photos or like his Google location, you know, trying to do everything. But for me, it wasn't enough because I was paranoid. I was constantly, oh my God, what are you doing? You know, and unfortunately I pushed him away and I'm not going to care much because, you know, it's like I messed up again. And I remember when we were saying goodbye and he was hugging me, actually. He said he couldn't do it anymore. It was after about 14 months and he was holding me really, really tightly and sort of just breathing me in and just saying like he was sorry, he just couldn't do it anymore. And I knew he was doing the right thing, not just for himself, primarily for himself, but he was helping me as well by walking away, because I needed to get help. I needed to sort myself out, really. And it was really a really difficult moment. And I think, not at the time, but now that I look back, it kind of really taught me this self-love and boundaries. Because for himself, he understood where his own limitations were and his own boundaries. And despite the fact that he was in love with me, and I believe, you know, and I felt the same way as him, he taught me again, you know, about self-worth. Like, okay, for his own mental well-being, his own health and stuff, he had to step back. And by doing so, he actually helped me, because that it made me ill, actually. I mean, first of all, I then sunk into a depression. No more music. There was no more. I didn't want to get out of bed. I just cried and cried and cried. And that made me very, very ill. And to the point where then I started becoming paranoid that I'd got cancer, because I was losing weight. I was in pain, but I didn't know what the issue was, and the doctors didn't know what the issue was. And I ended up in hospital, and they did all kinds of tests on me, and in the end they discharged me. And they said, look, there's nothing, we cannot find anything physiologically wrong with you. There's no information, there's nothing like that, and it's just stress, you know. And actually I remember at the time I was like, oh my god, you know, how can this be stress, this is ridiculous, it's almost like dismissing me, almost something's really wrong. But yeah, in a way it was also kind of like the realization, again not at the time, but this whole mind body connection thing, that we often separate mind from body.
Yeah,
but ultimately we're just one, aren't we, really? It's
yeah, we really are.
So things that you know, there has to be something, it has to go somewhere, or stress and mental, you know, if you hold on to all that anger and hurt and pain and you don't release it, it's going to go somewhere, and obviously it goes into our bodies. And that's what it did with me. So when I was discharged, I thought, this is kind of a second chance, you know, I'm not dying, there's nothing wrong with me. And just knowing that, I started to feel better. I did think that at the time as well, my son was just becoming a teenager, and I just couldn't communicate with him. I think this is across the board, isn't it? All parents, I don't know if you have.
Oh, totally.
It was just a nightmare, like literally trying to communicate with him. And I was thinking, you know, I can't communicate with anybody, you know, I can't communicate in relationships, I can't communicate with my own son, I can't communicate. So communication really was kind of this, it was just there in my thoughts. And I'd heard about neuro-linguistic programming.
Yeah.
And it's all about, you know, better your communication, right, things like that. And so I started looking into that, and synchronicity, coincidence, whatever you want to call it, being in the right place at the right time. My son was going away on vacation with his father for a couple of weeks, and literally locally, within like an hour's drive, there was this NLP course going on.
Cool.
Right at the exact same time, within, and you know when you just think, okay, this is kind of like,
yeah,
this is, you know, you can't, yeah, you just, this is the door that's opening that you just can't walk away, you know, you can't walk past. So yeah, so I started on this course, and it was like, I think it was like the first day, and they were talking, I don't know if, do you know about NLP? And
I know a little bit about, yeah, I know a little bit about NLP and how that works. So yeah.
Yeah, so like the first day was like the cause and effect, which is, you know, the victim or kind of just taking control. So the first day, when, well, the first thing I remember anyway, let's put it like this, it might not have been the first thing we learned, was about the whole, yeah, are you on the cause side of your life, which is, are you on the effect side? You know, are you a victim, or are you going to say, okay, this has happened to me, but I can decide, I can choose now how to react to that.
Right.
So the cause side, the in control, and then the effect side, the reaction. And so I don't know, again, it's nothing new, it's been around for such a long time, but for some reason I probably wasn't ready to hear it. I don't know, do you know when you just think there's yep, nothing new here, it's nothing new, but for me it was almost like, oh, little light bulb moment, like, okay, I'd never kind of really noticed this before. A lot of stuff had happened to me as well in my childhood. So I carried a lot of anger and stuff from my child. Again, all kinds of trauma from my child. That's, you know, this is supposed to be an uplifting podcast, isn't it? I'm kind of really dampening down the tone. I promise we'll get to some happy points in a moment.
No, you're great.
So, yeah, so that was that kind of a little bit of a light bulb moment. And I came away from that, and I was like trying all my, like, you know, because we knew about like hypnotic language and things like this, and I was like, oh, I'm going to test it out on my son, you know. So all this kind of close questioning, would you like to do your homework now, or would you like to do your homework later? And he was like, oh, I'm not going to do my homework now, and I'm not going to do my homework later. Why are you talking so weird? And I was like, no, this is not working. Why? But I've not got the skills yet, you know. So he was like, no, that's not working on me. So I thought, right, I need a bit more practice. So I went back and I did, for other reasons as well, for myself, because I just wanted to a deeper dive,
sure, into, sure, it.
Yeah, so I went back and I did the master practitioner. I did hypnosis as well, and much longer course, 150 hours of training and face-to-face and real kind of deep dive. And I remember it's like the second to last day, we were doing this kind of practicing our breakthrough training with each other. And I was the client. And I remember we were in this hotel and there were no other rooms available. We ended up like in the hotel lobby. It was like the cafe area. There were all these people like chatting away and having some coffee and things, you know. We were like, and I was like kind of like unleashing all my problems and, you know, trying to put the world to rights. And all these people were, and I remember our trainer, he's this incredible guy. He was more of a mentor. He was just really knows his stuff and everything. And he came past and he was kind of listening in to me ranting and having a good, you know, just bleh, you know, sort of verbal diarrhea and stuff coming out of my mouth. He just sat down next to me. Oh, I don't forget. And he was really quiet. He didn't say anything. And I could just remember like the smell of coffee and the sound of all the, you know, cups and people talking. And he just took out like a packet of tissues and put them on the table in front of me. And he just slowly turned around and he looked at me and he said, "Forgive me, Lisa," in a really quiet, low voice, "but why do you hate yourself so much?" Mm-hmm. And I just burst into tears. It's kind of like, it felt like a bit like waking up from a coma. Mm-hmm. There was this sadness that I'd lost all this time, but also this kind of excitement that I was now awake and I could do something about it. You know, I could live my life because I had held a lot of anger and hatred, you know, I projected out towards my parents and things that had happened in my childhood and my ex and all these other failed relationships and anybody that had wronged me. But obviously without NLP, you know, this is perception is projection, isn't it? We project outwards our internal feelings, and having somebody say you hate is, you know, that it was really, I was internalized. It wasn't about anybody else. It's how I felt about myself.
Yep.
That was a massive, massive, probably the most pivotal moment, I would say, because again, it was like that clarity suddenly, oh God, I could see that. Because I had then control, like it wasn't about waiting for somebody else to come up and say, "I'm sorry for all the wrongs." I had control. It was me. It was all about me and my world and how I thought about me and my opinions of myself, really. And I realized, that I had this, I'd been carrying this whole lack of self-worth. I'd sabotaged, you know, I'd been self-sabotaging without consciously, you know, unconsciously, mm-hmm. and stuff, this unconscious self-sabotage. So I'd either sort of attract, even when I'd attracted good things into my life, and I did, you know, I had some sort of successes. It's not like all my life was dreadful and terrible.
Sure,
I had this
happy,
you know, I went traveling and I sort of manifested. I was able to achieve my goals and manifest things. The problem was I couldn't keep hold of anything for very long. And again, I would just jump to something else. You know, I was constantly moving around. I traveled. I was kind of lived a bit of a nomadic life in my 20s because I wanted to travel. And I was constantly I couldn't stay still. And I'd done everything from teaching English to dealing roulettes. And, you know, I tried my hand at like literally every job going and feel that. And that was because I felt like I just wasn't good enough for anything long term, or I anything good happened, I would just simply reject it. If I had a good relationship as well, anybody that, as soon as a guy said he loved me, I was like, oh, you know. And I realized that was because I didn't feel like I was worthy of being loved.
Yeah.
I felt unlovable. And so that comes, you know, it wasn't that I was deliberately being cold, it was just that I felt like I was unworthy. And then when you see that and you realize, oh, that's why, that's my behavior, that's why I've been doing this, then you can kind of interrupt that pattern and change that behavior. So basically that's kind of really that moment. And everybody on the course is saying, you know, you're so good at this, you're so good at NLP, you're really, you know, it's like you're destined to do this, you're really good at it. And even then I was like, no, you know, my God, no, I'm not good at anything, that internal narrative constantly. So I've had to really work on that over the last few years, really, really work on that with, you know, self-hypnosis, affirmations, and that constant repetition, isn't it, which you have to kind of, as soon as you get that sort of negative self-talk, you have to understand where it's coming from and say, okay, you know, not today. Or that fear.
Totally.
I kind of see fear as like, you know, because we need fear, right? We it keeps us alive. It stops us going too close to the old cliff to have that selfie and stuff, doesn't it? We need fear, so you can't like get rid of it completely. But I think sometimes we just need to understand where it's just trying to protect us, and we have to say, well, okay, it's all right. You know, I'm not going to die today. Thank you. You know, I'm fine. I can do it, kind of thing. So yeah, so I've had to sort of learn just to reframe things and look at things differently. And it's also helped me improve my relationship, because I had to forgive myself as well, right?
Yeah.
And then I think when you forgive yourself, you then become more capable. It's much easier just to forgive other people. I know a lot of people don't really like this whole forgiveness thing. And it's complex, isn't it? Forgiving, it's not easy.
It really is.
But I, you know, I'm not going around preaching or you have to forgive or anything from any kind of religious or pious or, you know, godly way or anything like that. I just think, and also it's not about telling that person either. I think forgiveness is right. Just saying it's over now, I'm done with it. I just, you know, I'm not a victim. I've taken off my victimhood shackle and whatever, and I'm moving forward in my life. I'm taking what I need to learn and I'm going forward. And that's how I see it anyway. It's not about writing a letter and saying, you know, I forget, oh, let's have a hug and you know, whatever, you know, let's be friends. No, it's just saying, look, it, I'm done with it. It's over. I don't need it. It's not going to be hanging. It's not going to hold me back. And yeah. Things like that. So, yeah, so to answer your question in the beginning.
Great.
Why I started, you know, as a massive digressor, why I started to come to be a speaker. And that's why, because I had this opportunity to speak about a year and a half ago in London, actually, and literally in front of real people. You know, remember those days, those olden days? I don't know, happen anymore. Pandemic. But yeah, those, I mean, I don't know if you're in lockdown or anything, but anyway, I don't know if you can you actually have like meetings and things like that? Can you see people in person and stuff?
Not really.
No, okay.
So, yeah, but no.
So we're all in, yeah. You mean you do, but you're not supposed to?
Yeah, so...
And I had this opportunity to speak, and I remember like the coach, like I had the speaking coach, and she said, you know, like, let's make an amazing speech. What would be your legacy kind of thing? What would be your one, if this was your only speech that you could give, what would it be? And I thought, I'd never told this. Imagine that, you know, I'd been holding this story.
Right, right.
And now I had a kind of a happy ending. I mean, it's like an ongoing thing, isn't it? It's not like I'm perfect, of course. But I had an inspirational story to give hope. Now there was kind of a journey, and I thought, and I mentioned this to her, and she was like, yep, that's it, you need to tell that story, you need to tell that story, you need to tell that story. And so yeah, I was like, I mean, when I tell it, I'm pretty vulnerable.
Sure, absolutely.
Yes. So I was like standing there and I was like, don't cry. don't cry. Yeah. And I managed to get through it. I think nerves prevented that. But yeah, I told this story and everybody was like, oh my God, like this, you need. And then there were podcasters, there were people in the audience, and people started coming up to me afterwards saying, like, you need to come on my show. Like, you need to
keep telling
the story. And you need, this is crazy. You need to keep telling the story. You know, what happened? This is amazing. And not just because it's a crazy story, but just, you know, it's a journey of self-discovery, isn't it, really? Because it's not about broken relationships. I think we can all relate in some way because we've all been through something, right? So
sure, absolutely.
So that's the answer to yes, your first question.
That's great. Yeah. One, I have to commend you for first talking about this really difficult thing. So I appreciate that. And second, I love the vulnerability and your emotion that you share. I think often we have a story to tell, but if we don't come across as being real, then we can't connect with people. And so I really appreciate that, one, you shared it, and two, you shared it with emotion. I think that will connect with a lot of people. You are on your journey of recovering from this crazy situation, and you're sharing your message with the world. I think that, Lisa, is really amazing for you to do. You know, I think too often we don't open our mouth to share what we've gone through. And when we open our mouth, we help people get through difficulties that they might be going through. So I really appreciate it. I think you're an amazing person. You're on the right journey now.
Yeah. But I also think there's a lot of, I mean, because I think we all have the same thing. And I guess probably even more so with guys, that you put up and shut up. You know, you don't cry. You're not allowed to cry. You can't show your emotion. You just got to get on with it. And I hear this so many times, even from guys, that are just like, you know, this is going to go so we you have to share it, right? So because that's healing as well for yourself. And I think part of it is helping me. So also, you know, trying to share and inspire somebody else. If this helps one person, that's great. Because being a lighthouse in somebody else's dark, stormy night is also going to give me value and help me in my own journey. You think, okay, this is worthwhile sharing. You know, I'm getting, you know, it's helping, and it's helping me. So I think what you put out into the world, it comes back tenfold, doesn't it? That's really what I believe.
It's absolutely the truth. I mean, that is the case. And I think your story, you know, not every story is happy as it goes along, right? And we're hoping for that happy ending. And so I think that's the hope, right? That's the goal. That's what we're looking for, is to have the ability to shine our light to those that don't have it, that are in a dark time. And so that's what our message is that, you know, that we can find that hope in dark times. So thank you for your vulnerability and your emotions. I think emotions are indicators that tell us things that are going on in our life. And, you know, you bringing that out just shows how painful it was at the time for you. And you have to express that. So thank you for that, for sharing.
You're welcome. I need to lie down after this. I'm kidding. Yeah, no, I just, we always, again, it's like a natural thing. We sort of apologize for crying, but then you think, why, you know, it hurt.
Yeah.
You're reliving it, right? It hurts. So, you know, you should never be afraid to cry. But again, it's that narrative that we always tell ourselves, you know, oh, I'm sorry. We're always very apologetic all the time when we express our emotions. And it's like, we need to change that narrative, really. You know,
totally.
So hopefully, you know, somebody, there's, oh, I have a little bit more of a happy ending, actually, because I forget. I always forget this. The amazing guy, we got back together like three years ago. Yeah, and it's been absolutely, it's incredible. It's really, really amazing.
That's wonderful.
It probably leave me tomorrow now. That's that's rude. Like,
no.
but I'm kidding. No, but it's really cool. It's really amazing. And I feel it's just so, when you love yourself, you know, first and foremost, it just makes things so much easier in a relationship, because when you can forgive yourself, when you're compassionate, you know, you accept, and when you accept your own, when I say love yourself unconditionally, I mean, you know, when you don't strive for perfection, because that's unattainable, right?
Right.
So you don't require perfection in somebody else. And some of those things that I was constantly pushing for before don't bother me now. So, you know, when you sort of do that inner work and you realize that you are a worthy person, that reflects also in your relationships. Love yourself first before you love somebody else, for sure.
Yeah, you've brought up some awesome things. Jason and I talk a lot about trusting our gut, that you shared that you felt like something wasn't quite right. So you took action to figure out what that was. And you unfortunately found out that it was not what you were hoping, but you took that message and turning it around, that you are a lighthouse to people. I love that analogy, that we can be a light to anybody. And if it's one person, it's worth it.
Absolutely.
And then taking care of yourself before, and seeing your worth before you can help other people. So Lisa, Jason and I have come up with what we call
the double
down dose. You ready for this?
Okay.
It's not scary.
So we asked two questions to our guests. And the first question is, what is your definition of hope, or what do you see as hope?
What's my definition of hope? Now you put me on the spot. What's my definition of hope? Okay, let me think about that. Yeah, well, I guess then it's that that moment when you have clarity, that moment when you know, that tiny little bit of light, you know, it doesn't have to be. Sometimes I see hope in other people as well, like a smile. Can be just all you need. Hope is it's kind of an energy, isn't it? I would say it's an energy, it's a positive energy. It's kind of, yeah, here we go. I'm getting it now.
Like, you're warming up.
I'm warming up. I'm sick because I see things in pictures, really. So what I'm seeing kind of as hope is like a tiny little opening, which is expanding and growing and growing and growing, and that kind of energy and a ball of light. So that's, I know this probably no sense to anybody whatsoever, but when I see hope, I see it, you know, because I visualize a lot of things. And so I see hope as just this kind of, this ball of light that, you know, you can breathe in and expand upon in a way. And you can get that from various sources. You know, it's that where you feel, yeah, that there's possibilities. It's exciting, actually, hope.
Yeah.
Because it shows its possibilities as well.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
so now that we've got you warmed up on the first question, the second question of Double Down Dose is, how would you define love?
Oh, how would I define love? Oh, love is everything. Love is kind of the foundation of everything, I would say. Love is just, I think the world cannot exist without, you know, love. We can't move forward without love in our life. I think it's everything. It's everything from healing to hope to understanding to compassion. I mean, everything for me, everything starts with love. With self-love, actually, unconditional self-love. It's also, it's forgiving yourself for not being perfect. It's, which is, I think, is a huge one. And I think it just puts, it's one of those, again, it's an expandable thing that you can kind of expand upon. Yeah, love is literally central to everything. I would say that without self-love, it's kind of like, life becomes like trying to draw water up from a well with a hole, like a bucket with holes in, you know, or like a sieve or something. You just can't keep hold of anything. So I think self-love, I know you said love in general, but I would say self-love is almost your foundation for success and happiness in life.
That's awesome. Really
it starts with that. Yeah.
That's great.
I can see myself making my really big eye.
No, you're great.
She's nuts. I'm sorry. I just caught myself like gurning again, making funny faces.
Well, we love asking those questions because they seem so simple, but it makes people think, I think, on a deeper level, like I've never thought about what hope is or what love is. And we just love asking those questions. And we get all across the board different ideas. So we appreciate that. So to wrap this up, you had mentioned a book that you had written. You also had mentioned to us that you have maybe a special offer for our listeners. Is that still on the table?
Oh, yeah. Well, it might be a different one. When is this going to go? What I would say is, if anybody wants to just go to my website, I will have a free offer on there. Because I do have a book out. It's called Unstoppable Women. Again, anybody, there's the ebook, and I can put my signature on it and send a paperback as well with my autograph. You know, it could be worth millions in the future.
And I'm really yes.
Yeah, and just great. Like a nice little note from me.
Yeah.
So it's all going to be on my website. I'm guessing you're going to put the links down there. Because I really focus on self-worth, self-love, self-belief, and things like that. So that's really my jam. So all great. Things self-love, self-love. And that's my story. My story is in the book as well. There's a little bit more. And also 19 other amazing women who've also got vulnerable and shared their own stories. So it's not just my story. It's like a collection of 20 incredible women. So if anybody needs inspiration, there's plenty there. There's plenty. If somebody doesn't resonate with my story, there's other stories in there of bereavement and things like that, you know, and dealing with illness. You know, life-threatening illnesses and things. So,
right.
Quite incredible.
No, that's awesome. I love your story.
All with a positive message.
So yeah. Sure. It's sure. No, I'm so happy you shared, and I'm all about self-love and self-worth, and I think that's absolutely crucial in this time. So I'm glad that you know, that's part of your story is finding that love within yourself. So I've surely appreciated this time with you, Lisa. I feel touched by your story and sad that you had to go through it, but glad that you found, you know, this all of this great stuff on the other side of adversity, which oftentimes is the case, right? We go through something really difficult and we find that light and love on the other side of it.
Yeah, Lisa, thank you so much for your time, for really opening up yourself to us and our listeners, to everybody. I really think that that's where we learned lessons in life. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you guys. Thank you, it was a pleasure.
This is Sprinkled with Hope. If you liked this episode, please share it with a friend.
If you like our podcast, please give us a review or rating.